A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I thought I'd slow down the intro.
Why?
Because you were being very sort of like robotic and cool.
Robotic? I was just speedy and
I think
sexy.
I said Rob Diamond really fast.
Okay.
And sometimes my mum says that I talk too fast on radio. And then we found out why.
Because she listened to it at a higher frequency?
No, she listened to it at high speed. She'd put the double setting on. Because apparently on Apple Audio, whatever, you can tick different speeds of audio.
I took it very fast.
And she heard the Louisa Buck episode. And it was like, she'd listened to it at 2x2. So it was literally like, welcome to Talk Art. How are you? Hi, Louise. And we were all talking quite fast in that episode anyway. So, yeah, I slowed it down for my wonderful mother.
How are you feeling today, though? That's a question everyone's asking.
I'm feeling really... loved.
Are you?
Today, yes.
By who?
By my friends and my family.
Me?
By you, by our guest.
Our guest is...
like family.
The best guest.
He is the best
guest. He is family.
He is family to us.
How long have you known our guest?
I've known our guest since I was about... I feel like my voice has gone all kind of high-pitched.
It's hot.
Really hot. I've known our guest since I was about 26, and I first met him when I was in Tempo Shark, my old band, and I was... having a bit of a panic attack, not like me,
no.
Because I had to go on tour in America and I didn't know what I was going to wear. And I was at my friend's Nick's house and I was asking Nick what I should wear on stage. And Raymond, our guest today, oops, I just said who he is.
That's all right.
Our guest today was there and said, I can help advise what you should wear on stage. And we had a little chat about ideas and things. And I immediately loved him. And that was the first time I met him. And he was studying at St. Martin's fashion on a master's with one of my other friends, Emma. And over the years, we became friends. And then
you graduated in 2005, right?
Yep. And I, later in life, when I joined the gallery, bumped into him on the street outside a shop opening. And they... him and his partner were like, oh, what are you up to? And I said, well, I'm working in a gallery now. And he said, no way, we're collecting art and we love art. Like, we go to galleries all the time, let's hang out. And that was when our friendship properly, like, went into family kind of zone where we became best friends. And we were eating lunch with each other, like, and sorry, not lunch, dinner together, like, three times a week.
Never lunch.
Never lunch. Who eats lunch? We just have glamorous dinners three times a week or something. And I was seeing them all the time going to exhibitions. And over the last kind of 12 years or so, we've just grown together in the art world. And it's been such a joy.
They are a joy. But today we are joined by...
Raymond Berthold.
Hey, oh, that was very sweet. Thank you very much. You can talk at my funeral, please. Honestly, it's very touching.
So, Raymond.
Hopefully not too soon.
An incredible fashion designer, for those who don't know who you are yet, but they will after listening to this, of course.
Menswear fashion designer.
Menswear.
Well,
but
no.
Actually, it's not menswear anymore.
No, it's gender neutral.
Hot.
And that's actually happened because of the art world. It started off as a menswear brand, like way back after graduating, after coming back from America, I started a menswear brand. And then loads of people in the art world, women specifically, started also buying it directly from me, the studio. And they, women don't care if it's men's or women's wear. You know, if it fits them, it looks good, they buy it. It's different with men. You know, if you have a women's wear brand, men don't buy that. But so it just turns, it just started morphing. And then also I decided to sort of design with both sort of genders in mind a little bit in terms of colour.
But that's a recent thing to think of both genders in mind.
It sort of naturally happened like over the years, really. And now it's like official. So we definitely also photograph women. And when stylists come and pick for shoots or for if there's a stage performance or whatever it is literally 50-50.
for
female and male artists. I think it's really exciting. And it wasn't planned, and I wasn't even thinking about it at the time, but it came totally natural. And I love it. I think it's really nice.
And the brand is your name?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, my surname, which confuses a lot of people, because Berthold, the brand's called Berthold. My name is Raymond Berthold, but Berthold is also a first name. And that sort of confuses a lot of people.
Oh, Berthold's a first name.
There's like Bertolt Brecht. And,
Of course. Bertolt Brecht. Yes, you know how much I love Brecht, Russ?
You love Brecht.
And Arto.
Oh, God, yeah.
So lots of people, when they meet me first, they always say, oh, hello, nice to meet you, Berthold. And then I never know what to say. I always say, should I say, no, I'm not that nice. I'm stupid as well. So I run with it. And then eventually, maybe, someone will point it out, or I don't even care.
And actually, your clothes, I see them more and more and more. I go to openings of exhibitions and often, like,
the person
on the front desk or the director of the gallery or the owner of the gallery or the artist who's putting the show on are all wearing Berthold now. It's, like, become the kind of art world fashion brand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's something so cool about that because I think we all discovered it and it's not... Because before it
you
would
were
have been
one
like,
of the first, Rob. Can well, I just say you were there from season one.
Not to blow my own trumpet, but actually, I really was there because one of the first things you ever did was at the other store, which was called B Store at the time.
Yes,
and you did a bag. It was like a rucksack that, when you opened it up, became a raincoat. And I was just at the time. This is probably what year was that?
Oh my god! This would have been 2007, I think, or 2009, actually. 2009.
Really? That late?
Yeah.
I thought it was earlier. I thought it was like 2007, 8. Anyway, it doesn't
matter.
Could
be 8.
But I remember...
Is this when you went off and did your own label?
Yes.
Because you worked with Alexander McQueen for a while, didn't you?
So I did. So this was also when I was a student as well. So exactly. So I was at McQueen and...
Westwood.
Ferragamo.
Westwood, Ferragamo. You know, like loads of people did. And then I
did... What did you do within them brands?
Completely different. So at Ferragamo, it was amazing. It was one of my first kind of internships, which I won in a competition. And I think it's only in fashion you can win work.
That's your reward.
I said, oh my God, I got it. Like, I can go to Florence for like 6 months. It's exciting. I remember showing up there and they took me up the stairs into this grand old palace in the middle of Florence and frescoes from the 15th century in the city. It was so intimidating and wonderful. And I was like a young, student. And I thought, okay, so I probably must be sweeping the floor or something. I don't know. The head of studio came and I said, so what do you want me to do? And she said, she pointed to this beautiful big white table and she said, you sit there and you design. And that's what it was, 6 months. I just was sketching like a crazy. I never touched any rubbish. I just designed him. She decided, this woman, that I'm a British student, so I obviously know what I'm doing. So this is a very new thing for them. Everyone else was Italian. They were way more qualified. They knew what they were doing. I had no idea, but I sketched for 6 months. And when we had a fitting and they brought in fitting models, she gave me the scissors to shorten the skirt. And I was just shaking because I had no idea what I was doing. And everyone was just like looking at me like, that bitch came from London.
Who is that?
Did any of your designs go into production?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is
and
awesome.
And I even saw it, but I didn't even know at the time because the fashion cycle, you work 6 months out, until I was walking down Bond Street and suddenly I saw my things in the shop window. I was wow, is this actually really nice?
No way.
It's really
unexpected and very sweet and also probably ruined me for the next internship.
That was Ferragamo.
Ferragamo.
So who's the head of Ferragamo? Are they called Ferragamo?
Yeah, so it's the Ferragamo family owns it.
Okay.
But you don't really interact with them very much at all. They came in for when we had a presentation, but it was mainly the head of studio who just gets everything done. And she was very fiery, Italian, quite fabulous. But she had a temper and she would throw phones. She would speak to the factory and just shout, they'd just throw the phone. And it was not quite... It's a quite theatrical, but quite amazing as well.
Tough.
Because then she would, the next second she'd be absolutely fine. She'd turn around and she'd be like, this was all normal. And I thought it's actually really cool. I really liked
and
her.
So, and Vivienne Westwood you work with?
Vivienne Westwood, again, there was an internship way back. This was also a long, long time ago. And that was quite intense. We worked really long hours, but I learned so much and I got I ended up working more with the pattern cutters, just looking what they're doing, helping cutting out things. And I've found that really, really fascinating, especially with Westwood, because it's all about the fit as well, which is kind of where my heart lies as well with my own work. I 100% prefer like silhouette over a color or over a print, and I always had that kind of passion for a good cut. And there, I mean, it's as good as it gets. And then,
And was
then,
she present?
Yeah, but yes, yeah, no, definitely, definitely. But she's quite a creative, free spirit, you know. So it wouldn't be like a 9-to-5 job for her. You know, right, she would come in a bit later, or you know, quite a bit later, and then still say good morning, you know. But then she would be there and she would say things at fittings and you think, wow, you're actually amazing, you know. She had a very, very sort of original,
like what, like, can you remember any,
just you know, just the way she would suddenly say, no, cut this or this, you know, and you think, I'm not quite sure, and then it just was wonderful.
Yeah,
just a very kind of unique
vision.
Yeah, unique vision, not just fashion. It was much more like, in all the research should we bring to the team to look at the books, none of them were fashion in that sense. It would be more a sort of historical books about and it would be like knights in their armor and you like certain things about that rather than fabrics. And the same with print as well. There would be a painting,
yeah,
and then that, you know, a season late you would see that on a dress, you know.
Wow.
Like where things would be taken out. So I think she's very definitely very sort of artistic, more than
I always remember meeting her at a friend's house and chatting to her about art, and her knowledge of art was just second to none. I mean, you know, about ancient art, yeah, as well, from all different periods, and she had such a unique take on all of those times,
yes,
that made it so interesting and made me want to learn. Do you know what I mean? Like, she has,
yes,
that kind of enthusiasm for art.
This is inspirational.
And history as, yeah, well.
She's definitely, I always found she's definitely more sort of interested in anything that surrounds fashion, like all the inspirations are, rather than the business side or, you,
yes,
know, and that's what it takes, you know, if someone, because a lot of other people who, you know, like in the company who sort out other things, but she's the one who sort of gave the sort of creative input.
She's incredibly visual. I played Tintin at the Barbican years ago, and she came along to see Tintin, and she,
really,
wanted to come backstage afterwards to talk to us all about the show and the visuals and our costume.
Whoa.
She was really like, look at what I was wearing costume wise and how it transferred from like the comic book to like reality and how that worked. And it was amazing. And everyone was like, Vivienne Westwood's coming back. And we were like, what?
That's so cool.
Because she's a proper icon. Like, she's a historical figure, isn't she?
Oh, definitely.
And what about Lee McQueen then? Did you have experiences with him?
Yeah, so that was my, another internship was, I think, 6 months there as well before doing my master's degree. And that was a different experience again. Every fashion house is such a different vibe. And there were lots of students and interns and we worked really, really long hours. And
where was it based?
In, just off, near here actually, near King's Cross.
Right.
Just around the corner, I can't remember what the street is called. It's like almost like a townhouse.
Okay.
And it was really beautiful and also quite exciting. And the team was really young. And so we worked on all the showpieces. So we literally like spent every night like dyeing little bits of fabric in different shades of grey to create like a dress that had like 10,000 little bits sewn on. And,
wow.
And just all this kind of really creative stuff. And it's quite strange because if you work for someone like that, everything like all the, like the whole collection is quite secretive in a way before the show. It's,
yeah,
not kind of inclusive where you don't know where this is all going. You just work on pieces that are quite out there and crazy. And we work with really strange materials that, you know, don't necessarily think it's fashion. And then you see it at the runway show and it just becomes this amazing kind of spectacle and it's almost like theater and it's really, really beautiful. And so that was really interesting because at fittings and we weren't allowed to attend. It was literally Lee at the time. Just was still,
he present?
Yes. But he was more locked away in his office, I'd say. And then there was Sarah Burton, who is now the creative director,
yeah.
And she would assist him. And with that fitting, it was like maybe four people behind, you know, closed door. So we never really knew where all of this was going and what the whole collection looked
That's
like.
That's so exciting, though.
Because
then by the time the show happens, it's like you suddenly see his master plan or something.
It's really, you're
and
really
you've
proud,
helped build it.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah. It must be
when
so exciting.
Thinking, oh my God, this is the dress I've worked on for like 2 months.
And so was any of your works at the V&A in the last retrospective? You know, they had that massive show about 3 years ago.
I loved that show.
Yeah, amazing show.
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it?
No, because I wasn't here. There was a reason why I didn't see it. And then, I can't remember. When was it?
3 or 4
it's
years
like,
ago.
Yeah, maybe 2-3 years ago. Oh, you know what? It was maybe after the royal wedding or something, wasn't it? Because they had, or was that a separate one?
Whose royal
so
wedding?
So confused.
Oh, what, Harry and
I think Kate Middleton wore a McQueen dress, and then they had an exhibition. Maybe that was a different exhibition.
No, there was. I know exactly which.
They had a hologram in the middle and stuff that was amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You didn't get to see
yours had,
it?
No.
Well,
I think
Kate Moss.
Some of your creations was in there.
My creation? I just made stuff with love. You know, I don't know. I have no idea.
Was he nice, though? Did you like him?
I didn't really talk much with anyone.
Was he intimidating?
No, I don't think he
was probably so focused on everything, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was like in his room, so we didn't really see him ever. Yeah.
I met him once in a gay club in Soho, and he was dancing next to me, and I tapped and tried and went, "Oh, you look like Alexander McQueen." He went, "I am Alexander McQueen." I was like, "Oh, cool." And then he turned around.
I met him in heaven with Skin from Skunk and Nancy, and they were going out on a night out. And was dancing next to them for ages and had a little chat with him. And he was just hilariously funny and really open and friendly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really nice.
I think it was amazing. Just such a sad creature in the end. Yeah. Really sad. It's incredible.
Mm. Do you think he seems sad, like in his personality when you...
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah, I think so. Because this was... I don't know, when did he die? It was not that long before everything went really downhill. And I remember thinking that, you know... He didn't seem very joyful at the time. So when we saw him, I was quite focused and that was quite anxious. So I don't know. But then, you know, I was an intern, so I only saw that one side. Mm. And means maybe nothing, I don't know.
He was a great mind. I think he was amazing. Mm. So Raymond, you're originally from Austria.
Yes.
And you grew up in the ski slopes, basically, effectively.
In a ski resort, yeah.
Love that. Actually, in a ski resort. Hmm?
Can you ski?
Yeah.
of course, you can ski.
If you don't ski age 2 in Austria, that's it. You're shipped off somewhere else. honestly, there's no, but I say Austria, I'm specifically from a ski resort. So it's 100% yes.
So growing up in Austria in a ski resort, what was your kind of understanding of art, like, or fashion or any creative?
You know, very, very limited, and that is something that I found really quite difficult. So when I was growing up, I wanted to do fashion, but I didn't know anyone in fashion. I went to
How did you know you wanted to do that?
Because I preferred Vogue to Superman. You know.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know anyone in fashion. I didn't know how you start, and so I went to hotel management school. Like, so I got a degree in that, like most people, because that's kind of the environment I grew up in.
So you saw a lot of hotel art.
I saw. Oh my god, I still do now, and it still pains me.
I always think of skiing when you have those like embroidered pictures of like the ski slopes. It's kind of everything representing what's around you.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like pictures of trees, pictures of skiers.
Yeah, I think that's pretty grim. And I think fashion then I started traveling as soon as I could, and it was like 16 or even before, in the summer whenever I had time, I would just go on little
escape.
Trips. Escape, yeah. Honestly. Because you can't live in the mountains unless that's what you want. Loads of my friends are still there. I couldn't. I always prefer big cities. And then fashion also that happened. That I found a way to realize that dream. And then art was always something I didn't really know that much about, and it wasn't something that is anything in my family. So no one collects or no one is really, you know,
interested
or clued up or whatever. So I think that just also started, you know, so creeping in a bit more, especially when you're a fashion student. You know, you have to research and you can't just research other designers. I mean, that's not what you do. Mm. So you find the influences through art, through photography. And I think that's when you sort of, when you start getting really interested. And it was a completely new world to me. Like, I had no idea.
So
living
what kind
in a big
of
city,
artists
yeah,
were you well, looking at you in the early
to.
Days?
Well, it was really kind of weird. So we had loads of, like, obviously I went to some art and then there was the library, and so we had a lot of books that are complete mix match of photographers, even like people like Testino at the time or Teller, and then a photographer was always something I quite liked, or Tillmans, and then but then also the project on Erwin Wurm as I think we talked about before. Which I just liked because it was quite relatable, you know, to Erwin Wurm, because, you know, you make a fat car and you make a fat person. It's quite fun and it's all a bit humorous.
Is he Austrian?
He is, actually.
He's an Austrian sculptor.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you actually have photographs of his in your house?
In the studio.
In your apartment, your studio.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is this strange person standing there. It's called Man mit Apfel, like Man with an Apple. And he literally has an apple in his mouth. And so many people think that's me.
Really?
Yeah. And I was
like a portrait of you.
I was quite offended by that because it's a horrible sweater and like horrible trousers.
Well, I would never wear that.
The nicest thing about it is the apple. And, you know, like the rest is pretty, it's pretty grim. And so, yeah, I get it all the time. So I always said to you, I was like, nope.
So you wouldn't want to have a portrait of you up in the house?
No.
No.
So this photographer you was drawn to first, so Wolfgang Tillmans, you said, Jürgen Teller, Mary Testino.
Yes, it's just because it was because there was a fashion element in it.
Yeah.
You know, so you could relate to what their work and kind of transfer it to what we were doing as well. And then colour wise, whatever, you know, like with so many pictures and this was sort of now everything is on Instagram and everything is on Pinterest, and I sit with interns, they come and like when they come for an interview I see like all the same pictures they show me, you know, it's all it's I think it's much more a kind of universal, the research. I think it's gone a bit lazy.
Okay.
And we just went to libraries and we just found like this obscure old old image.
Well, there's more chance of finding stuff that other people haven't seen when you did it back then. If you went to libraries, it's like, well, if someone else has seen this publication, they might have this reference point. But if they haven't, then it's new to you. Whereas with Instagram now and Pinterest, it's like more and more people would have access and exposure, which is great. The world we're in, you're going to see more things, but it limits like the genius of finding something like unique. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, you'd have thought, okay, so there's now you've got the world at your fingertips, right? You can easily, but for some reason, they all have the same like 100 images, and I've seen them over and over again. There's always like a trend. I didn't know how that happens, but it's a little bit. So at St. Martin's, we had all these old Vogues going back to like 1890s.
Really?
How old is Vogue?
It's just next door.
How old is it? 1890s?
Yes. Have a look in the. It's actually just next door. So go in the library.
But was it only available in like Italy at that point? Or
you know, I have no idea.
But fashion magazine started in 1890.
Yeah, but I better check it. No, I'm pretty sure actually because then they have like all the bound editions from there.
Wow,
was like two,
so
years.
Cool.
You should definitely check that out. It's very cool. And so you look at things like that.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
And
I didn't know that. Wow,
no, it's really
that's
fascinating.
Amazing. What a reference.
Mm.
Going back that far.
Yeah. And they're all sort of bound and reprinted and they're all in...
Yeah, you're right. I've just looked it up and it says founded in 1892.
Yeah.
As a dignified, authentic journal of society, fashion and the ceremonial side of life.
Mm.
Vogue. Vogue.
Wow. Strike a pose.
Yeah. Vogue.
So what was the first thing you bought for yourself? Because you are a serious collector now. You and your partner, Paul Ettlinger, who we both know as
Dr. Paul.
Who's Finnish, isn't he? He's Finnish, his heritage.
His mother.
Is Finnish.
His mother is Finnish. And finished.
Right. And she was a sculptor.
Yes.
Because I swear that's why he has that love of sculpture.
He's a sculptor, but also painter.
Yes.
But she was a sculptor first, but then she had problems with her hands in older age, and she started painting. It's quite prolific, I have to say. So
in Finland?
No, in London.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so he grew up in London.
Right.
And she came when she was like a young woman.
Oh, right.
And collecting for you has become a kind of like part of your life so much that it's almost, I sort of identify with you, and I think of you as a creative individual, like designing fashion and putting on these incredible shows, which themselves even have sculptures within them, or the sets are often very elaborate. But I also then just like hand in hand with art.
Yeah, the art
and it's
world.
Not even just the art world, but it's like actually with artists and creative people.
Oh yeah, you're
and,
a supporter, patron,
yeah, totally.
Benefactor, you're always...
And also like sharing ideas with people. And I find you and Paul to be so generous because you often like host people at your flat in South London.
You bring
and
people together.
You bring people together and you do it so effortlessly and with no kind of purpose. Or agenda, exactly, that's the word, yeah. It's kind of like very open and for ideas and new ideas.
Oh, it's very true. I mean, probably I probably spend more time in the art world than in the fashion world.
Yeah.
And again, that wasn't planned, but I do like the combination. I find a lot of artists also very interested in fashion. There's a big crossover. And so I like it when artists come to the studio and you know, look at clothes and or get it from me, or we give them some for a performance. You know, sometimes people borrow, like, you know, I don't know, like George Henry Longley when he did the performance at the Palais de Tokyo. So we got all the clothes for them and so that's
cool.
That's really, really nice. And then
you were at Florence Peake as well.
Yes, exactly.
Because I love her performances.
Oh, that was fabulous when they
at the Hayward Gallery.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Eve Stanton.
Yeah, Eve Stanton, incredible.
And when they were scissoring down the stairs.
Yes. Yeah.
It was
scissoring?
Yeah.
Yes.
Scissor scissoring.
Yeah, like literally all the way down the stairs.
Yeah, climbing down the stairs. It's like an unbelievable performance. And really physical, really...
sexy.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's not even just about that, though.
It is, I think.
I know, but it's not... For me, it's kind of... It's about that poetic idea of connecting with somebody or something. Or love.
I think they're definitely getting... I think they're definitely enjoying it. Like, no, it's definitely great. Because normally they do it naked from the waist down.
Yeah, so exactly. But that's like... Yeah.
But when they did it at the Haver said, you can't do that.
Right.
So that's where we came in. So Bertolt gave them... made them shorts.
Right.
So it's all a bit more...
Protected. A bit more modesty, protected, yeah. Not as exposed.
Exactly. And wow. So, but he was still pretty full on because you were there, right?
Yeah. And also, I love the idea that on your Instagram, what is your Instagram? It's Berthold.
Berthold _UK.
_UK.
Yeah.
So you can see that. But on there, you often have photographs of creative people wearing the clothes, but actually just in their everyday life. And it's sort of started as a thing with some of your closest friends. But then as time's gone on, it's like so many people are wearing the clothes.
Yeah.
So you see all these great people from the art world. And different models as well, but yeah, Vanessa Carlos.
Oh, bless Vanessa. Yeah, she's got pretty much every season we've ever done.
And I think I just saw Angela Tune from David's Werner wearing one of your like copper jackets.
Yeah.
On Instagram, you know that amazing long coat.
Yeah,
she has. So cool. She looks amazing in that.
And then
Pauline and Sadie. Coles, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Amazing. So, what was the first thing you bought? Can you remember?
I think. There are two parts to this. So first, Paul, like my partner, he was collecting sort of modern British before we started our collection. I don't know,
Elizabeth Frink, exactly. You had, didn't you? And Henry Moore, did you? And
no, but Hoyland, John Hoyland.
Oh, yeah, I love that 1960s Hoyland.
Really beautiful.
So cool.
Really beautiful. But then what happened after my MA? I moved to New York.
Yeah.
And I had an apartment. It was all really modern. It was very, very New York for me. And like, you know, lots of glass and
lofty.
It's more like modern, but it's all glass and very urban. And so I had a kind of space, and so we just went to Chelsea, as you do, like on a Saturday, walking to the galleries, and then we sort of stumbled into this gallery that had Warhol prints. I was like, this is actually quite New York, right? You have to have a Warhol print. And so that's where it started. So we've got a Warhol print. And then...
What was it of?
This was Greta Garbo.
Oh, yeah.
The red one with the diamond dust.
Yeah,
she wearing the hat?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When she was...
Trilby.
Yeah, she's wearing... She is Mata Hari.
Mata Hari. Oh, I see. Oh, yes, that one. Yes.
It was quite kitsch, but somehow it seemed to work beautifully in New York.
Yeah. I
mean, it's a place, you have it. And then we bought more. And then a few more, and then
in New York or more Warhol.
In New York,
or...
more Warhol prints.
Right.
Yeah. So we had quite a few of them, and then you sort of then I moved back to London to start my own brand, and we got more involved in the art world, and then we stopped.
You shipped them all back from New York.
We shipped them back.
Yeah.
But then we had then we started collecting contemporary art.
Yeah.
Together in London,
and that was when we first started properly hanging out, like as all the time.
Yes.
And I remember. Just thinking how exciting it was. You guys had such a joy, and you kind of made me really excited. We'd go to openings together, and it would be like seeing the art through new eyes or something.
Yeah, we were really like kids, but there was a real passion there, and there still is.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, I didn't know how that all works, the contemporary art world. You know, it's not that straightforward. If you go to a gallery or if you go to like an art fair and say, oh, this is great, how much is it? Can we have it? And then they said, well, no, who are you? You know, what else do you have in your collection? Like, no, I don't think so. I'm like, okay.
Or it's already sold.
It's not like fashion. Or yeah, you have to kind of sort of justify.
Prove yourself, don't
you? Yeah, justify why you should be having this. And I'm like, okay, this is a bit, I didn't really understand. Now I get it. It makes sense. And I would do the same if I were a gallery.
Mm.
But
so did you sell the Warhol prints and then buy contemporary work? Or
yes, we did actually. Because we thought, let's start with a clean slate, no more prints.
Yep.
And you
haven't collected editions since, have you, of anything? That's been like one of your rules of your collecting, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, I think
the only edition you guys bought was sculptures, and they're from counter editions from Rebecca Warren.
I was going to say.
Paul has it on his office desk.
Yeah.
One of her incredible sculptures,
yeah,
MC.
Really beautiful.
Yeah. But that's different because Rebecca's editions are so special in a way. They're not just like, they're quite small. small editions as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like 35, like with the Warhol ones, you know, they're between 200 and 500 or like
edition size. Yeah.
And also the thing I felt with you guys was this idea of you wanting to support now. Because Warhol's no longer even here.
Yes.
And while it's great to have it, you guys were never, to me, interested in status.
You
or
emerging.
That, you know, because some people want to have a Warhol print. So when people come around for dinner, they're like, oh, you have a Warhol print. It's a bit like having a Damien Hirst painting or, you know, something quite, which is associated with success
status.
Yeah. But I felt with you guys, you were much more interested in what's gone on to grow into your
collection. Well, you want to be part of the journey
supporting
of emerging.
New art.
So, yeah.
Definitely. So, but there's also, we're doing both. We collect emerging artists or young artists, and then but we also have established as well. So we do a little bit of a combination.
Yeah,
and I think that's quite a good way to, you know, to also build a collection. I think it's nice when you know someone like a Magali Reyes sits next to an Isa Genskin, or you know, or Daniela Filida Barlow and a Sarah Lucas, and then like Jordan Wolfson. None of them are particularly emerging, but you know, and then you get like some really young, like Athena Papadopoulos, who's like this mad
I love that
sculptor
work.
We have in this sitting room, which is kind of next to Clara Lieden,
and it's on a carpet, isn't it?
It's on a carpet, and everyone loves it, but no one gets it. It's like this,
I get it, I love it.
Everyone thinks this is fabulous, but what do you think? Why? And so I think it's brilliant.
So you sold the Warhol prints,
And
then from that you then went and found what graduation shows, or you just started visiting?
No,
galleries?
Just also I think it started with art fairs as well and galleries. It's just going to lots of exhibitions because we kind of started that in New York, spending Saturdays. You know, going
it was a pastime as well.
Yeah, it was definitely a pastime. It was really, really exciting, and because in London I always thought galleries are not so accessible. You know, you can't just wander in. I thought, I know better now, but it was all a bit more intimidating, and we didn't really know how it all works. And in New York, it just seems very inclusive. You have like one street, another street, another street.
That's why the grid system in Chelsea works, because you
fantastic.
Can be a tourist there and you can wander in and out. It's not elitist. You can go and get a spot of lunch, do a bit of shopping, and carry on going.
No one even looks at you like the galleries. No one looks at why are you in here.
Yeah,
like,
what are you wearing?
It's basically almost like a space. You just walk in.
It's like going shopping.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. And then so we got sort of used to that sort of
vibe,
and did the same in London. And then you realize it's actually no different here. With most galleries, and that's how it happened.
And you have kept some of the early works from the initial collection, like your George Kondo painting.
Yes,
I think is hilariously funny. It's not your favourite, though, is it?
No, I hate it.
You hate it.
I shouldn't even say that. I hate it.
You can say it. Of course, you can.
No, why would Paul you not move it. That? Why would you sign that back to a gallery or move that?
No,
if you wanted to sell something, what would you do? How would you go about it?
Yeah, definitely offer it back to the gallery.
Right.
Wouldn't put it into auction.
No.
I think I also learned that. I think that it's very disrespectful to the gallery. And so we don't do that. And actually, we're not really selling anything.
No.
Probably.
It's more of a feeding system. Like I always found that when I bought like things and then offer them back to the gallery, it's not like I take that money then to go and buy a car. I take that money to then support emerging artists and keep it going. So it just keeps it accumulating. It is a feeding system.
Yes. And so we would definitely offer it back to Gary. But with the condo, Paul loves it. Everyone loves it.
I love it. I think it's a brilliant
one.
I hate it. But I don't really understand.
Have you still got it up in your house at the moment?
Yes, it's hanging. I see it every morning.
It's in your kitchen.
In the kitchen. Every morning I have a coffee. I'm looking at the ugly woman with her tits out. I don't know. But it doesn't offend me that much either. So it's not. Yeah. Otherwise, I probably would have hidden it by now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So as you've gone on collecting, the beauty of what happened was it started to kind of mix so much with your designing. And I remember starting to notice elements within your designs that had almost subconsciously sort of been informed from art. Mm. And there was one collection you did, because often Raymond's early collections were literally the only colour he would use. The palette was pretty much black. And it was all about... even today he's wearing head-to-toe black.
Always.
But it's all about the shape and the volume of the clothes silhouette. And the silhouette yes. and all of that. But as it went on, I swear to God that art somehow brought colour into your actual designs.
No.
And you did that amazing collection where you pressed different coloured fabric on top of each other.
Yes.
And then you had all the kind of, what's it called, the threads or the edges. You could see all these multicolours and it was like pink and green and blue maybe.
Yeah, like different primary colours.
Yeah. And then I remember you saying that was inspired by an artist that you started
Lydon.
To collect, Clara Lydon.
Yes, because we have the poster painting, you know, where there's stuck like loads of posters, like, I don't know, 50 posters on top of each other. And it was hanging in my studio and I was looking at it every day and I thought, this is so beautiful with all these, when you just see, it's the front was white, but then on the side, it's all these different colours. And I was like, yeah.
They're inspired by when you're in the streets in Berlin, when the people put bill stickers yes. up, posters up, the posters are built on top of each other, on top of each other, and she would literally take them off and they would come out as like a solid piece of like 50 posters over the years.
Oh,
and
that
then
I didn't realise.
Front one.
Oh, that I didn't realise.
Yeah.
So it's got that sense of time passing and layers and history.
Time capsule, but,
and,
but then it's been whitened out, then it's been kind of...
I thought she actually recreates, like,
I think they're found.
All the old posters.
Maybe she has done, but I think most of them are found, aren't they?
I wasn't sure if they were found, but they could well be, because I also thought she takes bins off the street.
Yeah, that's
like trash.
You had
trash
a trash bin, didn't you?
No, because... because I quite was into it for a bit, but then Paul said, no, it's been stolen, I can't take that. And then I thought about it, so actually yes it is, you know.
And it had trash in still, she kept the trash in some of them, didn't she?
There was a great show at the New Museum in New York that I saw that had the poster works but also had a whole installation of bins, and it was actually an incredible show. I really like Clara
Lydon. Is this from all around the world? She has a coat and she has all like the tools in the coat to like pull the bins off of the pavements and then she'd steal them and ship them somewhere else and then put them in the gallery.
I love the idea, but I agree, I actually don't want to buy it because it's been stolen. I think I'm too Austrian like that.
You've got an amazing light by her, like a light work.
Yeah,
that has a bulb in it.
It's a canister, isn't it?
It's like
exactly.
spray painted like pink or something.
Yeah, and we use it as a light at in the sitting room.
She's very Dada, actually, isn't she? That's very Duchampian to kind of use... ready-mades and then appropriate them and put them in the gallery and make them her own.
She's really, I think she's really extraordinary, and I'm so glad we've sort of discovered her as well years back. But also she has films which are quite tough. I find her quite hard to watch sometimes, you know, when she sort of beats herself up and it's really...
Well, she actually beats herself up.
Yeah, she's really just... It's quite hard to watch, you know, really struggling with, you know, with things.
I've not seen that either.
Yeah.
I saw her show in Berlin, I think at Neue Gallery, maybe.
When we were there.
And, we went together, didn't
we? Yeah, with Aidan
Turner. And it was a really interesting use of space. Like, she's really good at...
She has that neon line going through everything, through the space, and there are a lot of big plastic...
Which was linked to your light, actually, I think.
The pink neon line that you
had. And she sprays, on furniture. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sprays them and then takes the, like a masking tape off, so you've got like a clean line going through. It's very cool.
Yeah.
It is. But do you still collect her work now?
Not for a bit, actually.
I haven't seen her do a show.
No, before. And I haven't seen much.
She's so good. She'll be coming back soon, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely.
So what's your taste now? Do you think your taste has altered like through collecting? Because you said at the beginning, for Paul, it was modern British, and then you went into like pop art,
yes.
and then now it's emerging, and that's very German. Her style was kind of, that time was Matthias Feldbacken.
Yes.
And
which is also in my studio. I got several Matthias Feldbackens, but I think luckily Paul and I, we got like very similar taste in art, and I don't know what it is. People often think it's quite hard, our collection, you
your
know.
Taste.
A little bit, but
I've always thought there's a very, you know, you said your love of the city.
Yes.
Like, if I think of you, I think of concrete, actually. It's one of the things I think of. And you even wear a perfume that's like, smells a bit like concrete or something, isn't it? Yeah, it is. It's like Comme des Garçons. You love all those what are they called? Like those kind of intense smells as well, don't you? Like...
Like a city, like being in a metropolitan...
I do like hard, you're absolutely right. So concrete is definitely a theme
in the
collection. And but again, we weren't really aware of it. But then suddenly, look, when someone says, "Yeah, you collect a lot of concrete," and we don't, but we have quite a few.
There's definitely like an aesthetic and a way of looking at the world, which
texture.
I see in your designs and also in your photography when you do your shoots, you know, for the campaign, but also. So in the collection, you can see it. And I think it's got more and more a strong theme as it's gone on, almost.
Yeah, because I do like, as I said earlier, I do like silhouette and shapes rather than prints. And so figurative, I like, but I wouldn't We don't collect it. So much part of abstract or even sculpture. I'm quite keen on sculpture. Also, because we live in a modern building where we don't have so much wall space.
Yeah.
It's a lot of glass. So what do? You either don't put anything in there or you put a sculpture in there. And that's...
Because of the sunlight as well. You don't really want drawing.
Yeah, also because literally we haven't got a wall.
Yeah.
You know, so if we've got all glass, like windows around, so you can't hang anything.
So what do you have by Matthias Fahlbach? And do you have his...
Matthias Fahlbach got the cherry cans.
Okay. And they're in concrete, or are they?
They're in concrete. Yeah. They're in the studio.
And he's Norwegian, by the way. He's not German.
He's Norwegian.
Yeah.
Did I say German? Yeah, I mean it was like their Germanic style.
I think we might have seen a show of his in Berlin.
Yeah, we did.
Which is why we associate him with Berlin.
Yeah.
No, he's definitely...
Yeah, he shows a standard Oslo, doesn't he?
Yes,
in Norway.
Yeah.
Love him so much.
No, he's really cool. And then we've got... what else have we got in the studio? Let me think. We've got books of...
There's like a kebab skewer going through.
Yes.
And stuff.
Oh, yeah,
like,
really, so cool. Really rough.
They're all psychological books. And they're all like really Freud big. And...
Yes.
Yes, yes.
It's
yes.
amazing. Yeah. But that's in storage, sadly. And then in the studio I have two cardboard... So ripped up cardboard...
Boxes
behind glass. And then he paints over the frames as well.
Yeah.
So it's very cool.
How would you describe the overall style of your collection now?
Oh, God, I have no idea. I'm probably the worst person to... I honestly, I don't know. But I think it's very personal.
Yeah.
That's what I would call it. So we don't collect with... We collect from the heart, really, more than with the brain. And so it is definitely very personal to us. And
I think it has a strong personality, the collection, though. And I think it reflects both of your personalities. Because you, to me... are a bit sort of calmer, maybe more cerebral. And then Paul is very sort of social and high energy and very funny. And you've both got a kindness
and a warmth. Paul's
very vocal
as well about straight away about what he likes, what he
doesn't. Paul's super instinctive, isn't he, with his taste? Whereas I think you maybe stand back and think, you know, in a different way to him. And you can feel that in the collection. There's like a kind of, not a tension, but like a something going on.
I don't change my mind. So once I know, I know.
Right.
And I think Paul would be more like excited very quickly. And then and like a day later, like, oh, I'm not so sure now.
Right. Do you think you've made mistakes? Would you class them as mistakes in your collection?
I don't think so.
No?
No, I don't think so. Because we usually buy what we like.
Yeah.
And then
yeah, then you're not making a mistake, are you? Because you love it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you think financially, then maybe sometimes you could say, you know, oh dear.
But then you never know, do you? Because 20 years later, something might end up becoming, you know, it's all about time and perspective.
Exactly. And then you buy...
And like you say, if you buy something you love and you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Do you ever use art advisors or anything like that?
Yes. That was a bit of a chain, like game changer. So we work with this fabulous lady called Aphrodite, which the name alone is like, wow.
We're big fans of Aphrodite.
And she's amazing.
Aphrodite Gonu. Aphrodite Gonu.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah.
And she started out at Sadie Cole's gallery.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then she went off and did art advising.
Yeah. Mm. I actually saw her the other day for dinner, and I'd said that we'd interviewed Sadie on our podcast. And she said to me that working for Sadie was so incredible because it was the only gallery she went to where Sadie said to her, one of your roles while you're here is to take our collectors to other galleries. And she was like, what? Why do you want me to take them to other galleries? And she said, but Sadie wanted to educate her collectors so that they would go to all different kinds of galleries across London when they visited. So say they were visiting from France or from America, they would organise a little tour for them to go around all kinds of galleries, from like the youngest gallery to like maybe, I don't know, David Zwerner, whoever, like the bigger ones. But and then you'd get to educate your collector so that they would end up being more responsible when they're collecting. And I thought that was so interesting.
But you know what?
And that then led to her becoming an advisor because she got all these connections to all the different galleries. So in a way, she ended up leaving Sadie's, but she ended up, it actually came from that experience, and I just thought, how cool.
Do they still have
that?
A friendship?
Yeah.
So how did that come about for you?
So we met Aphrodite through a mutual friend, and not in the art world. So we had dinner with her a few times, and then we just started, you know, chatting, and because I didn't even know an art advisor, you know, what you needed for what you know, what's the reason. And then so we started working with her and it changed everything. She's got so much integrity. She's got great taste. And also when you go to a gallery and you say, you know, what do you have on your books? And they say, we work with Afro. You know, the doors open much more. It's this whole thing we said earlier when, you know, when they say, well, who are you? What, who else do you collect? And why would we sell to you? You might be flipping. I don't know. But if you work with an art advisor, it's basically almost like a calling card and they know you're serious. They know, you know, you building a nice collection and you're serious about it.
Let's explain what flipping is.
Yeah, so you're not going to take an artwork from the primary market. So you might buy a painting for £5,000 and give it 2 years' time. Maybe that artist's career's got bigger, or 5 years' time, and then suddenly that work could be worth £100,000.
Or 6 months.
Or 6 months, you never know with these days. It's all a bit mad. But and then sometimes people will be buying those works just as an investment, not because they love it or they want to live with it, but they're buying it purely as a way of moving money around or whatever. And then they buy that artwork and then will take it to an auction house 6 months later and sell it for £1 million or whatever and make profit. And that's kind of what we all wouldn't necessarily want to happen, at least within the first 5 years of owning an artwork. Of course, people might need to move things around at times. You know, it's life. And sometimes people get divorced or people die, like George Michael just passed away. And, you know, the collection goes on sale. Things happen.
That collection, by the way, was
advised by Aphrodite.
By Aphrodite.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She was advised.
That was her thing, yeah.
To the Michael
Goss Michael Foundation. And she helped them set up that museum in Dallas. And it was a real passion for George and Kenny. And I really respect Kenny still. I think he's a great guy. So, but it's interesting. So that when you work with an advisor, they also help to educate you in that way and how to do it. And if you do want to sell something, it's fine, but try and not do it too quickly. And also take it back to the gallery first.
Offer the gallery first.
Yeah.
Got it from
it's all about respect. I think that's something I learned and I like that. It's very clear.
Yeah.
And she's brilliant. She doesn't play games.
I love with her what she's found for you, because she's found things like your Isa Genskin sculpture. She found it at like a weird auction that was at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and it was an empty room. And I remember she called you guys and you ended up getting that incredible sculpture for a price that, you know, because you just wanted to live with it and love it. Yes. And you managed to get it at an accessible price, whereas now it's totally inaccessible price. You wouldn't even be able to buy it, you know.
Yeah.
So it's she's really got her eye on all kinds of avenues, not just the primary market. She kind of looks on the secondary for you and will find special things that you might not have noticed yourself.
Yes, exactly. So most of the time we find works and then we ask her, what do you think? Should we get it, or is it just get her take on it? And then and then the other time she would email us saying, okay, there's this, I'm at an art fair and there's this young artist, I don't really know, but it looks amazing and I think you would like it. So it's really nice. It's very playful the way
it's nice to have a sounding board almost.
Do you try and run everything by her?
Everything. That's kind of our rule.
And do you ever go against what she says?
Because when you live with someone who's quite, oh my, it's beautiful, you know, you get everything.
Have you ever got against, does she ever turn around and say, don't get this, and you guys are like, still like it and get it?
We might have done that, yes, but no, usually we don't, because I always say to Paul, you know, there's a reason why we work with, so she's got the deciding vote, and I think it's very important.
And how does it work then, how does it work, financially or whatever, how does it work, with an art advisor? How do you guys... Do you pay a weight? Does she get?
I think they're different. Everyone does a different thing. So some people, our advisor, they work on a commission base,
right?
So
gallery, they work with
gallery I presume so. Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't really like the idea of that. I think that makes it a bit more kind of murky. If you know.
Definitely. And also these days you have to. You have to be transparent about that. So if the gallery is giving an advisor an amount of money, you have to put it on the invoice so the person buying it knows.
Oh, really?
You can't keep it secret, because otherwise it's bribery.
Yeah, good.
And it's completely illegal because it is murky. Yeah. And actually, I think most advisors now get paid either a commission. So say you buy an artwork for £5,000 and you get a 10% discount. That will go to the collector. They buy it. And then the collector will pay 10% to the advisor, and that's a much better way of doing it, because at least it's all very clear that way,
right?
And the collector's been given the discount and whatever, or you just give them a salary. So some people are on permanent, monthly wage or whatever.
Yeah, that's what we do. So we have a retainer every month, and it doesn't matter if she shows us one work or 20. And I think it's nice because we also have because she's not always in the country, it's a weekly call with her. Just to run things, just talk about you know what we have, what we should do, if she's seen anything, if we've seen anything, or we just email her pictures and then on that day we just go through them and I think that's a really nice way of doing it.
And is that retainer negotiable price wise, or does it retain stay what it is each month?
Oh, I think it totally depends. I have no idea what other art advisors do. This is literally something we came up with. And then also it depends how much you work with an advisor. You know, she has got many clients and some very big ones, and she also creates a Cycladic museum. You know, they're different levels.
And that museum's in Athens, isn't it?
It's in Athens, and it's really wonderful. And so everyone...
And she's She's Greek heritage.
Yes, Greek, yeah. And she has some of the biggest Greek collectors. She advises them. And it's quite interesting because I've spoken to art advisors over the years, and they've got to be so careful not to take on collectors who might be trying to buy the same thing as the other collector they represent, right, because you have all these politics going on. So you do have to really think about your roster of collectors. It's not as simple as just taking everyone on that comes to you. Mm. You have to really kind of work it out. It's quite interesting. And are there any artists you love at the moment?
Looking at...
God, there's always like new people. So we just bought a Mandy El Sayed,
yes,
from Chisnell. So we bought, because we saw her show at Lima Mop in New York. Mm. And so we bought that.
What is that like?
So the show was really beautiful, and it's Greek paintings, and there's sort of cutouts of kind of newspapers or images behind, and it was all very, it's beautiful, and but the one we bought, they didn't have to show us, so it was a PDF, and I saw it for the first night last night for the first time last night at opening and as it turns out, because it's quite big, I mean it's big, I realized that it's a massive vagina.
Oh wow!
Vagina with a bumhole, and like a woman. And a woman.
You're always going to want the bumhole with the vagina.
So honestly, it's like we're like, whoa! This is, it's kind of amazing. It's really cool.
Well, you live with that?
Yeah. It's not. It's it is quite big actually. I'm not sure. It either has to go to the office, or we have to figure it out. But it's in the show at the moment, so we haven't even got it.
And that's at the Chisenhow Gallery. And you're a patron there, aren't you? You and Paul?
Yes.
I'm a patron of Chisenhow.
Yeah, I love the Chisenhow. And
Holly and check that out. But you think that's a good show?
Yes, a really, really beautiful show.
And I think would you buy that through Lehman Maupin? Was that
That's what we did, yeah. And they just signed her up, actually. Great. As in, announced yesterday.
Oh, cool. Great.
Enough. Yeah, it's very new.
And you... have actually, talking about the Chisenhow, there's an artist called Ed Fornielas who did a really big show at the Chisenhow maybe 3 years ago or so.
Yes.
And you've actually collaborated with him within your fashion brand.
Yes.
So explain how that whole...
Oh happened. My God. So because I was a big fan of his work anyway, and then because I think he's really cool. He's got an aesthetic that I think it's just something different. And I wanted to do a collaboration, but I was scared of artist collaborations because fashion art, it's a bit of a weird one. Because... I'm too respectful to artists to say, you know, I don't want to just paint something and then put it on a T-shirt. Mm. I think that's just a shitty way of, you know, exploiting someone.
It's just a bit lazy, isn't it?
It's lazy and it's exploiting someone's talent. And I think it's not really nice. So, but I was desperate to do a collaboration with Ed. And so I spoke to the gallerist, Vanessa Carlos, because I didn't know what the form is. You know, I wanted to do it properly through the gallery, not just do some you know, upset people. And then she said, no, definitely up for it, I ask. And so he was up for it. And then we decided to do a big, show. It wasn't meant to be that big. It was maybe like maybe 10 images. And I said to Ed, you do what you want. It's totally your project. And I give you the clothes to dress the characters in whatever it is you decide to do. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I thought, that's quite nice. Then I just have the clothes and he has... division.
Yeah, like independence. Yeah.
It turned out to be quite a big project. So we had, I don't know how many characters. There was a storyboard and we had 2 days like shooting in so many different locations. And then he just applied all this kind of weird effects to the characters in the shoot. And it was really, really amazing.
It was almost kind of like virtual reality or something. It was like another world that was digitally put on top of the photographs.
Yes.
So they were interacting with these otherworldly cartoon kind of characters. Not even cartoon, but it's more like computer gamey.
Yeah, it was super, super,
super, super kind of futuristic modern. And modern and forward thinking.
I was so amazed when they came back and so because he showed me things and was like, whoa, are you sure? You know, this is more than we agreed. You don't have to sort of go over like there was another one. But he was so excited about it as well. And he's such an amazing person.
When was this? When did you do this?
A couple of years ago.
So did they end up becoming a collection you could buy?
But the collection was like the copper one you said.
Yeah. So it was like the images that you would see to promote the new collection. So it was a kind of visual diary of the collection,
like a lookbook,
yeah, and it's almost like
it's more like
a show,
like campaign shots. It's more like a weird it's no that you can't even see the garments after time because they're literally crouching down. It's just like an art story,
yeah, like creating an atmosphere or an experience that you can visually see, like a visual story,
right?
And for me it was almost like, you know, if you have a catwalk show and you stand there and you watch everyone walking down the catwalk, it was a kind of way more interesting way of showing Raymond's clothes because it became a visual story. And I think the way we're all interacting in the world now with Instagram and all of these things, it's just, it was a really great idea to sort of have that as a story rather than just having the show.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Amazing.
That was really great experience. I would definitely want to do that again.
Who would you, if you, what's your dream collaboration? If you could have any artist in the world that you'd collaborate with right now, who would it be?
Oh God, I don't know. But I would like to work with, if it could like team up, or someone like, Sarah Lucas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, imagine. Yeah. I would like a triple collab between Sarah Lucas, Issa Genskin,
yes,
and me. I think me just like sitting there, just watching the spectacle. I think it would be
triangle
incredible.
Of dreams. That is right.
Oh my so God! Good.
Imagine.
And you've got a new Sarah Lucas sculpture in your flat,
I know,
which I love. It's like a totem almost.
I know. It's called Breeze Random Blocks. Mother. Or I call it Tit Tower because it's like bricks with boobs on it. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Tight. And we've got another one, which is a table and a toilet and boobs and bricks.
So
but that's in storage for now.
So what so these works you have in storage, because you must have a lot in storage. Yeah. What's the plan for the future of your collection?
Well, hopefully, eventually, after Brexit, we can sell our flat and then move to bigger spaces. I would love to show it, and it kills me that. But what do? You either stop collecting,
yeah,
or you
store. One day you can have a space or something. Paul's often mentioned it to me, this idea of having like a little space where
that
you could
would be great.
Install things, but you'd have to
within
find the right
your
building.
House. Like you'd have, like you'd have people over, like you do now, but then you'd have like a little museum wing or something.
Well, I'm going to.
Or
I'm
just
sure we're
going to
have a wing,
or but a separate building like, or something.
Yeah, maybe we need to get something in Margate.
Exactly. Yeah.
Margate's the.
That would be so cool.
Margate's
the thing. You know, get a little a space.
Well, you're very welcome by the seaside anytime. So
you are the gatekeeper of Margate.
We ask every guest who comes on the podcast two very important questions.
I know. I've listened to your podcast, and it's not going to work like that because I've got some very important questions.
Ooh.
I'm going to ask you.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's not how it's going to be.
Oh, wow, because
I've been talking so much. So your question. So hang on, I have to find him first.
Do you need your glasses, babe?
No.
We're getting older, aren't we, all of us?
No, but
you are.
So it's about art heist thing, right?
Okay.
Art heist colours, blah blah. So first one. Right. So Russell Robb, so you die, right? So you go up
together.
To heaven, obviously. You die together.
You obviously go up to heaven, okay.
Obviously to heaven, yeah.
I do.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think Rob probably gets there before you.
Oh,
why? What are you saying?
I don't know. I don't know. It's just a feeling I have.
Like some dark
I just get more of a hell vibe from you.
I'd go there for a bit, chill out. Then, yeah.
No, so, okay, so so you're, right, you're in heaven, and but there's incarnations, so you have to come back as an artwork.
Ooh.
So what would you come back as? Would you come back as, let's, for example, do you want to be in a town square, a sculpture, where
yes.
people walk past and,
yes.
I don't know, throw things at you or just dress you up, yeah.
Russ,
or just
he's
love
an
you.
Actor, so he'd love the attention of being a sculpture.
Or would you be like a little fresco in a little chapel covered up by plaster work?
No, I'd be like a fuck off big sculpture, like the Thinker in the middle of a town where people can come up and touch and take pictures with and walk around.
Attention,
and I think I might have my bum out.
Definitely Ooh. Hell for you. Yep.
Big biceps. Yeah, I'd love that. Definitely hell for me. Yeah, I'd be a sculpture. What would you be, Rob?
I would be a film.
Ooh.
By Paul McCarthy. And it would be The Painter, his film.
That's not the one where he's like wanking into his boxing glove and punching himself with like...
It's the best film ever. I'm saying no more. Everyone has to go out and find it.
What's it called again?
The Painter. I'm pretty sure it's called The
and
Painter.
And would you be the character in
I'd
it?
I'd be the character in
and
it.
And you'd just be on loop
just,
forever.
I just, yeah, and I think that
I have
film,
no idea what it is, but I can't wait to see that.
Amazing.
That's he's really represented, wow. I think, by Hauser & Wirth.
And would you want that to be shown in a museum or...?
Well, it is shown in museums already. It's got its own life.
Would you want
life.
To be in a public
And I think you should be able to go
collection.
To YouTube. Yeah, you can. It was made in 1995. It's called Painter. And you can go on YouTube and see clips of it. And it's like a performance film. And it's about the action of making paintings. And it is, I won't say any more because I don't want to ruin it for all of you. But it's, honestly, I think it's one of the best artworks ever made.
Oh my wow. God.
And also Mike Kelly. I would pretty, sorry to give you two. I'm doing a thing here where I'm getting too many ideas. But Mike Kelly, who actually made work sometimes with Paul McCarthy, and he's no longer with us. He died a few years ago. But I went to his show at MoMA PS1, and there's a room of all these toys and things.
Sewn together.
That whole installation. Yeah. I mean, I would love to come back as that work as well.
Wow.
God. Okay. Rob.
That was quite heavy, wasn't it? I don't know where that came from. Yeah. But who knew Rob had these depths?
Well, and ambitions.
Ambitions, yeah.
Amazing. Well,
I want to see this film now. I'm going to be really disturbed.
Okay, favourite colour.
Me.
But, yeah, okay, favourite colour. But it's not a colour. So imagine the sky.
Yeah.
Okay, it's no more blue. It just can't be blue. So it has to be a colour for life. And that colour is constant.
Oh, God.
So it's not just changing a T-shirt to red. Well, so what colour would you want to live in?
I was going to say, when you said colour, I was going to say Battleship Grey. I love that, like a bluey grey.
Well, you have to, but in London.
But I don't want the skies below that, because that would be incredibly depressing on a daily basis. So it has to be something bright and vibrant. But I'd give it like a light, dusky pink.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah?
I was going to say a kind of almost fluorescent pink orange, because the sunsets recently in Margate have just been these insane colours, and I find myself just sitting on the steps by the sea watching the sun go down, and I'm obsessed with the way the colour can sort of literally the whole sky in Margate can become this pink. But it's not like, it's kind of very bright pink,
but
pinky
that all
orange.
The time would do your head in.
No, I wouldn't, babes. I love it. I feel super calm when I'm in that, around that colour. It's really weird. I think I need help, but I really feel
you
calm.
You feel super calm around neon pink.
Yeah,
I'm not sure which world I'd rather live in, though. If I had to pick between the two of you, I'd
go dusky pink. You'd be with me.
I'm like a knight.
Well, you go fluoro pink with me. This is like a competition now. I can't believe you've turned the tables. That's not
fair. Hang on. There's two more. But
there's two more questions.
Yeah, no, because, yeah, exactly. So this is now, again, for both of you. If you have to give, let's say you give me an artwork I have to make into a garment which you then have to wear to an event.
Oh, wow.
What would it be? What would it be? What artwork would you want me to make into an outfit?
So, well, it'd have to be, I would think it'd be a photograph or a painting that would then be made into a suit.
Right. That's okay, you're thinking see. Suit?
So, yeah, I'm thinking suit, because to an event, so I'd probably have like a Picasso blue period painting that
very
you would
classy.
Then yeah very classy thank you and then you'd have the canvas and you cut the canvas up and make it into a suit, but it would definitely be a painting, I think.
Well, I've always been really inspired by the Belgian fashion designer Dries Van Noten, and I've always loved when he uses kind of tapestries and textiles. So it's not necessarily iconic famous artworks necessarily, but because his history with his family, with they had like carpets and I don't know, or tapestry making or something in his family, I think. So he grew up in Belgium with that kind of strong aesthetic. So for me, that's some of his favorite collections, is when he's done things like that. So I would love you to take the Bayer tapestry.
No, I knew you
didn't
say that.
Because we just cut it up and have it as like really sort of almost like going to the Met Gala.
Yeah,
consider
it
done.
Up with all the kind of history.
You'd
and
have
the
a long
bloodshed.
Train on that.
Exactly, a long train, but all that kind of like history of like war and humanity and all of that kind of depth. And I would love that. Or Hieronymus Bosch, you could get like one of his, you know, universes and.
But you
all
never
those.
Know where you are.
What do you mean?
Like with his, you know, when you never know
all the different levels,
how everything works together.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a very confused when they look at you.
Well, I am a very confusing human being, so I'm up for that.
You're cryptic.
I'm very cryptic.
What's your last question?
Okay, the last one. Now, that's a very straightforward. So, Russell.
Yeah.
What do you think, what artwork represents Rob? So, what do you see when you look at Rob?
A bank suit.
What sums him up?
Well, actually, the girl with the red balloon.
That's
quite
very
mean.
You
That's
are the girl with the
mean.
Red balloon.
It's like the tragic single Rob. The heart is always flying away from.
Oh, baby.
It's
no.
The factual.
No. You're surrounded by love.
I wish I hadn't asked now.
Rob would be
like, I could see him in, you know, Wolfgang Tillmans, when he photographed like William of Orange, he photographs all these historical figures. I can imagine him being like a William of Orange character, but within a Wolfgang Tillmans photograph.
Really?
Yes. You have that contemporary feel, but you have a lot of weight and history behind you.
Wow.
Do you know, if you're going to ask me that question about him, it's really hard, because I immediately start thinking of all the artworks where Russell's actually been the artwork, because he's had a lot of artists over the years photograph him or paint him or do things, and they all come into my brain right now. Because you've done...
But how do you see him? Do you see him more...
What medium am I?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a large, but what medium am I?
Painting, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
What sort of painting, Rob? Like minimal or really figurative or landscapey or
No, I'm thinking like
abstract.
Big figurative, kind of naked, kind of like, because I know that you like all those kind of Wolfgang photos and things like that. I don't know, I'm thinking of the human body or something, like a detail, like a painting of like an arm or a shoulder. Yeah. Or something.
But I like figurative works, and I like. I mean, I've got a lot of naked women. I've got like a
and also cartoony.
Cartoony.
I think cartoony is Russell.
Wow. Yeah. I feel a lot of love here.
Maybe like a cartoon.
You two look at each other's eyes. Very sweet.
But the weird thing is, I really am finding this hard to answer because I immediately think of who have you been painted by, babes? Because you've had quite a few people. And that photograph you did.
My bum by Daniel Sinsel.
Your bum by Daniel Sinsel. What was the photograph that was done in New York where he hand touches the photos?
Oh, yes. There's a photograph of me that's been done, and I did Eddie Peake's performance at the ICA where I was him.
Youssef Nabil.
Yes,
Youssef Nabil, yes.
Youssef Nabil. Yeah. So there's a photograph of Russell in bed or something.
Tracy's drawn me.
Tracy's drawn him. Yeah. There's so many artworks that I think of. That's what came to my head, weirdly.
Wow. Well, that was an easy one.
Well, how did you get out of it, though?
Yeah, what's your favourite colour?
What's your favourite colour?
Oh, I didn't know why I did it. My favourite colour, oh, God, this is a really tricky one, because everyone thinks it's black, and it probably is.
Because well, that's it's good.
Because, and it's not, in my collection, I use a lot of colour, but black, I think it's there's something very elegant, very calm, and it's not, if you look at every other priest, you know, they're all black, and it's just, I think there's something really, really, really peaceful about black. And also, black in clothing makes it all about the cut and the silhouette rather than everything else. So, and that's probably where my heart lies.
And if you could take any artwork home, what would it be? If you could do an art heist yourself and steal artwork?
I think it would be the top two floor of Tate Modern.
All of them?
Yeah.
Just turn up with a truck.
The floors, just the floor. Because it'd be great to live in. And then the turban halls to show the collection.
Oh, it'd be your own collection in there. So you won't be taking anything else, you just want the space.
Yeah. Heaven. I want the museum. Heaven. I said, that's not all allowed.
No, that is allowed.
Wasn't
I
meant to say
that.
Something humble.
You're like, taking out all the art, goodbye.
Bye, guys.
And I'm having the two
Fuck
floors.
Off. I'm
I just
in
want
now.
Space. I want space. It's incredible. It'd be great to have all space. Like,
So before we say goodbye, you've actually brought us gifts.
Yes.
And we haven't opened them yet. So
good.
If you We're pass open them that on one over to us.
So. Is that for me? This is so generous of you.
It's not generous. It's very easy.
But this is the paper. That's the bag.
You're lovely boys.
So we're opening beautiful Berthold bags right now, and it has his brand sticker on it.
Oh my God, yes, Berthold, B-E-R-T-H-O-L-D.
Oh, wow.
What is it?
Oh, it's beautiful. I love it. I haven't got one either. Thank you.
That is amazing.
He's given us the most beautiful embroidered, talking of embroidery and tapestry and everything,
scarf,
and it's got the Berthold name kind of very subtly embroidered out on it.
That.
We'll take a picture of us in this. We're going to wear this when we take our picture.
What's it made out of?
Italian. It's like an Italian. But so there are two. There's like one side is cotton, so it's warm around the neck, and the other side is like so we call it parachuting, which is a super techy Italian material.
Which you love.
And which reflects light, and it's just really nice.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And I don't, weirdly, I have so many of your clothes from the last kind of 10 years or more.
Yes.
And I don't have this one. So thank you, clever man.
Well, we'd have to wear this for the photographs now, because everyone's going to be, what's it look like?
And also, I thought colour-wise, this, because, you know, black, hell, and whatever. It's actually, fun enough,
this is
you're
like
wearing
kind of
black
green.
And you're wearing green.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Green. Is his black?
Black.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Well, I got the green, because I'm glad I got the greens.
Well, you're wearing green now.
Green. I know. Well, I love it.
Wow, amazing.
Well, thank you
very,
so
very
much.
No, what an amazing guest.
Not at all.
Turning the tables on Tool Car.
Yeah, and you're the first fashion designer we've had on the show. Yeah.
Wow, and the last.
But and maybe the first collector as well.
I can hear you saying,
Yeah, I think
we've
you
had
are.
People who do you're, collect, but you are seriously...
This
like,
is just like an episode of firsts. Well, Raymond Berthold, thank you so much for joining us. It's been beyond a joy. And for everyone listening, we'll post as many images as we can onto the @talkart Instagram. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and you can rate it. I think you can maybe even give us 5 stars if you think we're good enough. We love you. That's not like trying to bribe you into giving us 5 stars, but anyway, we'll be back very soon.
Thanks so much, Raymond.
Bye. You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram @talkart, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.